The theme of the home, as God intended it to be, is given great importance in our Bibles, in both Testaments. I think all of you know that. And during the last year and a half here at Grace Christian Fellowship, we have probably focused more on the church, we have focused more on our congregation here at Grace, than what we have on the home. And there was a good reason to do that. I think that needed to be done. I'm glad we did it. But the Bible puts an awful lot of focus on the home itself. We live in homes. And there are children among us. And these children are growing. And we gathered here both as parents and as pastors are responsible for how life goes for them. Because they will soon be out of our hands, though it looks like 20, 25 years is a long time. It really isn't. I've discovered that. 20 years goes by in a very short time. Brother Albert has lived 20 years four times already. The concepts your children form the first 6 to 8 years of their lives will still be guiding them 20, 30, 50 years from now. The values, the concepts, the way we teach our children to think about us, about themselves, those concepts will guide them a long time from now. And this will not be the theme this morning, but there are at least two very important stages in child development. The very early years of childhood, perhaps between years 3 and 8. Those are very sensitive years for a child. And then the beginning of those adolescent years, perhaps from 11 to 13 on to perhaps 17 through 19. Who your child will come to be is basically formed in those periods of his life. And soon after this, the arrow is released by the archer, and he will recall it once airborne. And yet I want to remind us, that you're still the mercy of God. So there's a title written there on the board, and you might not notice some things there that might be important in those five words. I want you to notice, first of all, that the word is child and not children. Now, if you're a worshiper of the high God, you have a tremendous question in your mind already. Brother Dale, why did you say that? Do you know why it says child and not children? If you don't know why, we have to find out why. If you don't stop spending your time with your children and don't start spending it with one child at a time, you'll never do what that says up there. That's not done with children. That's done with a child. This is not a herd of cows. You don't take a trough and fill it with forage and say, help yourself. Children are not cows. A child is not a cow, not a heifer, not a bull calf. You work with these one at a time. Values instilled in a child one at a time. Instilling value into your child. And I know you have more than one. I mean, some of you do. I'd like to read several texts to you, and some of this was nearly read this morning, not quite. It was very close to it, but we'll go to Proverbs. We'll go to Psalm 127. I want to read several texts to you. Psalm 127, verses 3 through 5. The value of a child as far as God sees it. Lo, children are heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them, and they shall not be ashamed. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Go to 128, verse 3. The wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants round about thy table. There are the verses in the Psalms that talk about the value that God places on children. But this verse is found in Proverbs 17. And I'm just going to read verse 6 here. Children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children are their fathers. So someone's a grandfather here in verse 6 of this Proverbs here. Children's children are the crown of old men. That's the value that God puts on children. And then there's a verse that you know very, very well, but it's important to notice it because of what we need to prepare ourselves to learn later. But we're in Matthew 19 here, and I'm reading verse 14. Matthew 19:14. But Jesus said, suffer little children and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. And that's not the only time Jesus said that. He had said that same thing in the 18th chapter. Now he says it again in the 19th chapter. And on a different occasion, and probably with different children around him. For of such is the kingdom of heaven. So you have that child nearby you there, and where you are on your bench, and you're very close to the kingdom of heaven, right there. What's the little girl's name, Amber? Kingdom of heaven.
Canada.
Yes, I thank you, but I'm saying you're close to the kingdom of heaven, if that little girl is close by you. That's an outstanding thought, the value that God places on children. And I wonder if we realize that that's what we have with us, as boys and girls, as those little ones, kingdom of heaven. That's what God says about it. There's no doubt about the value that God sees in a child, that God sees in all children. We certainly see that in Jesus. The dramatic story of the healing of the Syro-Sophician's daughter is proof of that. I think that's the only time that Jesus ever went outside the coasts of Palestine and went out there and healed a heathen woman's daughter, a pagan lady's daughter, and came back again to where he was. And that story is not only interesting from the standpoint of geography, but it's also interesting with what they did to that woman. Four times she was rebuffed. Four times she was told to leave. Four times she was told there's no hope. Four times she was told we don't take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. Four times she was discouraged. Four times she was shut down. But for somehow this lady had enough of faith. I don't know where she got it. She must have listened to Isaiah's devotional this morning. And she stayed with it. She stayed with it. She stayed with it. And finally Jesus said, listen lady, that daughter's healed. I haven't found faith like this in Israel. She was tested and tested and tested. But she had something in her favor that she didn't know about. Jesus was as interested in that daughter as what she was. Cared about that daughter just like she did. We have stories like that all through the Bible. Jesus said, forbid them not to come to me. Jesus said, bring him hither to me concerning a young man who, when he was on the Mount of Transfiguration with three of his disciples, the other nine could not do anything to save this boy. The father wanted his child to be helped. Jesus said, bring him hither to me. Jesus said these words, damsel, I say unto thee, arise. Jesus said these words, feed my lambs. It was, you just could go through the life of Christ and pick that out. But I want to return to our title, instilling value into your child. God sees the values there. You know, it's going to be very, very hard for me to instill value into my children or grandchildren if I don't see that value that's there. I think one of the reasons why parents have trouble with their children is because they see their children differently from what Jesus does. You see, Jesus looks at a child and he sees value there. It's there. Jesus sees that. I think many parents see it differently. They evaluate their children this way. What value is that child to me? That'll never work. Please hear that. That will never work. That's defeat coming up. Serious things coming up there. So I'm going to try to answer four questions this morning. The first one is, what do we mean by saying instilling value into your child? What does that mean, instilling value? So I have to answer this question both negatively and positively. The first part is negative. We are not intending to make them proud. That's not what we mean by value. We're not trying to instruct them in the art of positive thinking. We're not trying to make them great. Look, you can take the world with a tail and a downhill drag. You can be amount to what you want to in this life. That's not what we're talking about. Don't take second place. Don't take no for an answer. You go out and get it, do it, and be who you want to be. That's not what we're talking about when we talk about instilling value into the child. The purpose is not to give them a sense of self-importance or to give them a lofty view of themselves. Our interest is not for them to develop their own very personal impression package. Now, we have a son that no longer is with us, but when he was very young, he would talk about someone he saw behaving in certain ways, and he'd say, yeah, at least we can see what his impression package is all about. You know, everyone has their impression package. They want to put that on and show off, in other words. That's not value. That's not what we're talking about. Our interest is not for them to develop their impression package, to show off, to outshine others. It is not about pecking order. It's not about a competitive spirit. All of which are carnal and gross violations of Jesus' evaluation of children when he says, for such is the kingdom of heaven. You don't find that in the kingdom of heaven. This world is really bent on making you great. Your body must be perfect. Your hair must be perfectly done. Your gifts must be developed. You have to excel in what you are doing. You have to be a success. You get awards for doing that. You get special privileges for doing that, for being that. That's not what we're talking about when we say instilling value into your child. Kingdom greatness is the opposite of the world's values. It is not so that they be the head of their class. It is not so that your child becomes one on the A honor roll, becomes a member of the National Honor Society. You might not know what that is. Your child is not here to succeed and show others how false they are, wrong they are, how much they have failed. Look what I've done. I'm on top. That's not the point. Some parents want their children to perform well so that they make their parents look successful, look great. Children will soon discover if they are being used for the selfish aims of their parents. Jonathan, Saul's son, in the Old Testament became keenly aware of that. He was his daddy's trophy. Yet he tried to take credit to himself for what Jonathan did. And Jonathan soon discovered that he was simply a pawn on his dad's chessboard. Your children will discover that too. Mine will. And probably already have. So if that's not what we mean by instilling value into your child, then what do we mean? What we do mean by instilling a sense of value into your child is to help him see what he is worth. Not only to us, but what he is worth to God. What his life is worth. I saw parents cheering their children on in a softball game that was held down in Lynchburg at a school picnic earlier this year. And that was fine. I have no problem with parents doing that, but I want you to listen to the next sentence. Your child is worth just as much if he strikes out as he is if he hits a home run. Does anyone agree with that? But I ask you something. Does your child know that that's how you feel about it? That's the issue. I was on the wrestling team in high school for 9 years, for 4 years, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And we had a match with a very impressive school. They had never lost in their history of their school. They never lost a wrestling match. And I lost to the partner that I was with out there, the opponent. I remember coming back off the mats because you're kind of discouraged and you kind of feel ashamed of yourself. And our coach's name was Walter Price. And Mr. Price walked up to me and put his hand on my shoulder. He said, Dale, that was an outstanding job. He said, I don't know if you know who that opponent was out there or not, but you did very well, Dale. I appreciate what you did for us. A failure. Receiving words of appreciation. Get that? Where's God in that? Where's God there? Children will discover if they are being used for our selfish aims. I told you that. Yeah, he hits a home run. No, he strikes out. How do I make that child feel? It is that kindly acceptance of the child for who he is. That gentle encouragement to strive to learn, to strive to grow, to develop, to serve. While at the same time, the wisdom and correction and purposeful instruction of daddy and mother is ever intended to improve the quality and the nature of that child. We're helping them to grow in what they really are worth to God and helping them feel that and know that we see it and help them understand that God sees it. Though they might not ever be as greatly known, as successful, as powerful, as wealthy, as accomplished, as achieving as other people are and as other children are. I think one great big difference, we went to the same high school, but I think one big difference between my wife and myself was this. That I knew that I was nothing, and I tried for all I was worth to become something. And Suzanne didn't have to do that. She wasn't the greatest. She didn't receive the awards, but she didn't need it. She was happy. She was at rest. She was content. She was appreciated. She had a very different kind of home life from what I had. And so you can understand how the Lord used her in my life to fix some things that were badly broken. And I don't know if we'll talk any more about that later or not. But I'm just trying to lay a little bit of groundwork here before we get into the heart of this thing. You see, if we're truly intending to encourage our children to do the best they can, learn some more, write down what the king wrote, then read it, then obey it. If we're trying to kindly, gently nudge our children towards growth, towards development, towards servanthood, we accomplish that best when we carefully examine the spirit with which we do it. Yeah, I didn't know that machine does that. So now we learned. Yeah, the spirit with which you do it. Oh, we'll move on here. What hinders, question number two, what hinders a child from feeling valued? I could keep here for 2 hours. I'm afraid you wouldn't like to do that. And I'm not going to do it either. But I will take time to tell you a very sad story. And if I tell you a story, when I'm speaking, the story is true. If it isn't, I will tell you that. This is a true story. I wish it wasn't true, but it is. We were living in Costa Rica. We had a dairy farm down there. I learned that there was going to be a sale in which they were going to sell Jersey semen that was national semen, not imported from Canada, where we were getting most of ours from. And so this is going to be a sale set up there. There's going to be some national Jersey stuff available there. And I decided to go there just to see what they had and what kind of characteristics these animals had there. And I went there and I saw this lady with this crowd of people. There were not very many, maybe only 15, 20 people there. Here was a lady. I could tell immediately that she was not a Tica. She was not a Costa Rican. She looked very, very English, and I heard her speak, and I could tell that was an English language coming out of there. So I walked over to her, and I said, are you a farmer? Yes, we have a certain number of manzanas up here on a very lonely hill, a very remote place, and they have some cows there, and she came to buy the semen. I said, really? It's a very impressive woman, well-dressed. You know, you could tell that's upper echelon kind of stuff. You know, it wasn't the typical country bumpkin. So it just struck me that there's a story here. Went home. Sometime later, a taxi pulled into our driveway. A state-looking man and a lady get out of the car. And the taxi driver backed up out to the dirt road that we lived along and drove off. And there stood this man and woman. I was in one of the chicken houses. I got out and walked out to meet them. I saw immediately that lady was the lady I saw at that sale. Took him in the house and sat down. Suzanne got them a little treat, which is a common thing where we lived. And within 20 minutes, I heard this story. He looked at her and he said, but we say we wouldn't do it. She said, if you think it's okay, I guess I'm okay with it. But are you sure? Mom, we said we'll never. I know that's right, Daddy, but maybe it's okay if you do it. I thought, what is going on here? I didn't have to wait long to find out. We are from England. We both have been through Cambridge University. Our parents are both doctors. We have two sons that are doctors. We felt that we'll leave England and move to Canada. We took our 19-year-old daughter with us. The boys stayed in England. They put their daughter into the most elite school they could find in Canada. Instilling value into your child. A phone rang one day at their home, and an authority from that school called and said, "We're sorry to report to you that your daughter just committed suicide." They were so ashamed as parents, they were so distraught. They decided they're going to move away from Canada, go to some remote place where no one will ever see them, ever find them again, where they'll never have to answer to anyone what happened in their lives, what happened in their family, where they never have to face it, never have to look at it, discuss it. They moved to Costa Rica, bought a little property way back in the boonies, got a couple of cows. They're not farmers at all. To make themselves look like little peons back here in the jungle with a couple Jersey cows. To hide the shame, to try to erase the memories. They were in my home 20 minutes and told me the entire story. I'm going to ask you a question. Did they instill value in the heart of their 19-year-old daughter? The values that they instilled in her took her to her grave. She couldn't measure up. She couldn't match dad and mom. She couldn't match her two brothers. She decided there's only one answer for her. But sitting at our table in our simple little house, that had no paint on the walls and no ceiling, sitting there, I had two 19-year-old girls. And the future of their lives is going to be greatly affected by what I say to them now. Is there any word of hope? Is there any mercy? What can we do with this elite couple from Cambridge that are sitting here in our little house in Costa Rica? There are sad stories. What hinders a child from feeling valued? I think most of you sitting here are old enough as parents to understand what was done wrong with that child. Suicide, dear people, this morning, transgenderism, homosexuality, lesbianism, crime, drug culture, are all the results of a child who did not feel valued. Of course, the greatest cause of rebellion in children and in youth is anger in the home. I think all of you know that. You've heard that before. And the interesting thing is that anger knows how to smile. Anger can buy nice gifts and brag on the children and put them into Ivy League colleges, all without seeing the true value of the child. The list of thoughtless responses that destroy a child's sense of value is a very long list. Please help me to tell you that the Gadarene demoniac did not begin his life in the tombs. Something drove him there. Do we get that? And all of us know as we sit here this morning, none of you would miss this question. None of you would get it wrong on your test. You all know that what he lacked was his parents' love, and that's why he ended there. It is easy to permanently destroy an underachieving child, a handicapped, One with a learning disability. Maybe he is sickly. An unwanted child will feel the rejection. Not all such babies are placed in garbage bags in the streets of the cities. Some of those babies ride in car seats to the Sunday morning worship service. That's where my concern lies. We're trying to answer the question, what hinders a child from feeling value? Any effort that we ever make in punishing a child where the goal is to beat the evil out of him will surely result in failure. I have experienced, I have seen parents beating their children. They had no idea what they were doing. They had no idea when they were going to quit. There was no kind of governance that's controlling the heart, that's saying, this is my purpose, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're aiming for. We know when we've accomplished that, then it's satisfactory. Just a beating. We're going to beat because I'm upset. Beat because I'm mad. Beat because you hurt me. Beat because you shame me. Beat because they're not going to have it in my house. Beat because we don't do this kind of thing around here. You're my kid. Beat them. I'm going to read you a Bible verse. It's interesting what the Bible says about this subject. He that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity, and the rod of his anger shall fail. You sowed that iniquity into your child, and now when you see his behavior, you don't like it. You see his performance, it doesn't suit you. So you get a rod in your anger and decide to beat it out of him. The Bible says it's going to fail. It will. It's interesting that that verse that you do not know, it's in your Bible, follows a verse that you can quote to me by heart. Train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That's verse 6 of Proverbs 22. The verse I read to you is verse 8. See if the paddling, if the chastisement is fueled by frustration and embarrassment instead of being fueled by an effort to secure the heart, to secure the improvement of that child, then we're going to, the child will not sense his value. I think a lot of times children are corrected because the parents are upset, frustrated, they don't know what to do. If you never heard this definition for anger, I'll share it with you. Why do people get angry? It's an extremely simple answer. All anger is based on this. All anger comes because of this. We get carnal anger is simply a person expressing himself who does not know what else to do. If you had the control, the knowledge, the understanding of how to handle this, you have no reason for anger then. Ever. Not ever a reason for anger then. But it's the expression of a poor person, a bankrupt person, who does not know what else to do. Raising a child. Trying to instill value in a child. There's no value going to go in there. And then, after that beating, to turn the child loose and say, go on, behave yourself. will only increase the damage done to that child. Making fun of a child, or ridiculing him before others, or chiding him for not matching the skills or achievements of other children, will lower his sense of worth. I know this verse is in the Bible. We always take this verse in its negative sense, but there's a positive word in this verse. It's Psalm 12:3. Romans 12:3. It says, "For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith." And we say we shouldn't be proud. We shouldn't think too much of ourselves. That's true, but that's not all the verse is saying. It also says there is a way that you and I ought to think about ourselves. There is a value that God sees in us. And we're not properly training our children if we don't instill that value in them. Think soberly, according as God hath dealt to every man the measure of faith. And God does expect of our Gabriel what expects of our Virgil. Doesn't matter if you have a child that isn't quite like your others. Your children don't have to be a twin, a clone to the greatest, the best, the most achieving that you've got. I cannot brag on my success and call attention to my capacity and instill true value in my child at the same time. A selfish parent will produce a neglected child. I'm going to say this sentence because it will reinforce what I said at the very beginning. You already forgot that I said it, so now you can hear it again. We are not here merely to produce babies, but we are here to be fathers and mothers to our children, one child at a time. Let's move on. What builds value in the heart of a child? What builds value there? Of the many Bible illustrations of this point, I think of Genesis 22. I'm not even sure if I'm going to turn there. I'd like to read it to you. Genesis 22, 1 to 14. That's the story, if you don't remember it, of Abraham and Isaac taking that journey to the top of Mount Moriah. The journey begins with God talking to Abraham, giving him an assignment. It tells us there that early the next morning Isaac arose. He must have got his hatchet or his axe, split some firewood. He got three of his servants. They loaded some stuff together. They started on a trip. They got to, after about a 3 days journey, Abraham stopped them. They got their stuff together. He told the servants to stay there. He said, "I and the lad will go yonder and worship." And Isaac was used to his father's worship patterns. He was used to his daddy building altars wherever he went. He was used to daddy taking firewood along and some way to make a fire. And he was used to something else. He was used to this, that when daddy did that, he took a sacrifice along. And now they're walking along together. The Bible says they went both of them together, instilling value in the life of the child. They went both together. And I'm sure that daddy had a lot in his heart, but the boy did too. "Daddy." "Yes, son." "Well, I don't know. I was wondering about something. Did you forget something? I know why we're going up there, but did you forget something, Papa?" Isaac. God will provide himself a lamb." So they went both of them together. That satisfied the boy. You know, daddies, when your children feel free to share with you the greatest need, struggle of their heart. Something is going very well in your home. And when your son would feel free to tell somebody else about that, ask somebody else about that, but not you, something is seriously wrong. What caused that? Why is that? How does he do his father's high view of God, his commitment to worship? And here Isaac learned that he was considered a worthy participant in that worship. Now this relationship of value and trust that these two had together, daddy and son, began long before this day traveling up the mountainside. So they spend time together. Listen to their conversation together. And what Abraham did, I'm sure Isaac will remember for a long time. And then Isaac must have heard that angel say, because you've done this, Abraham, because you have obeyed my voice, in thee and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. And Isaac listens and he says, that includes me. I'm part of this. That angel is blessing my dad. But I am his seed. And God's going to use me to bless all the nations of the world. That's what God sees in a child. Isaac was no one special. He was no one different from what you have sitting beside you on this bench this morning. Your child will make mistakes, but let him know that you still trust him. You still believe in him. And you know that God will use him. Somehow or another, David instilled a lot of value into Solomon, but he didn't do so well with some of his other children. Include your little ones, include your children, your developing youth in your projects, in the work that there is to do. Let them help you fill the pots with oil that you have in your house that must be filled up before they're sold. Teach your children that little lunch of barley cakes and grilled fish is of great value, maybe not only to them, but to others. Teach them how to share it. Give them responsibility according to their capacity. And let them know how much you appreciate them. The measure of your confidence in them is the level of worth they will feel from you. Constant censure of your children, criticism of what they've done, without praise and appreciation, will put distance between you and your child. A father that is, a mother that is thankful and content, whether they have little or whether they have much, will teach a lot of good to their children. And do never look down on those who have less than you do, and never be critical of those who have more. Your children will notice that. And now I move to the most important thing I need to say this morning. Why is instilling value in a child into a youth? Why is that of such serious consequence? I'd like you to pay attention for a few moments more. If you don't see by this time the importance of these thoughts, if it doesn't strike you the eternal effect that this can have in your home, then I would invite you to do something. I invite you to get in a car with Mose and Lizzie Gingrich and make a trip to Fresh Start in Indiana. Have your seatbelt on, Moses. You see that connection, Moses? Were you able to figure that out? Yeah, if you would spend some time there, you would soon learn to value the seriousness of what we're hearing this morning. What is the value that David instilled in Absalom? What did he put in that boy? We can never prevent our children from learning what we truly feel about him, what we truly think about him. That child will discover that. He won't discover it when he's 8 years old. He'll discover it before he's 18. May I do something? I can't do it truly. I can't do it literally. But may I take you back to the home life of the people that find themselves today at Fresh Start, or find themselves in Shepherd's Fold, or places like that. Many of those daddies, of those young people, those people that are there today might be 50 years old, they might be 40, they might be 20, but many of the daddies of those boys and those men that are there are preachers. So why do their sons and at times their accompanying wives need to be there at places like this? Why would you send your child to Fresh Start or one of your church members? Would you listen to this? These places try to provide what the child needed from his home and never got. That's why they're there. You see, if we would go to Fresh Start and something did not happen there to change that person, who they are, what they think about themselves, if something doesn't happen to change that, they'll go back home the same way they were. That's the way they came. So Fresh Start has got to do what should have already been done, but it wasn't done. That's why they go there. Security, acceptance, a sense of accomplishment. Time with dad. Time with mama. For many people, much of what they do is never good enough. No matter how hard they try. So one day they stop trying. To know you are loved when you just failed, or faced a loss, or are guilty, is one of the greatest gifts that anyone can ever receive. To know that I'm so loved and cared for, still appreciated, someone still sees value, even though I just made a terrible mistake. I just failed in a terrible way. There are two ways to respond when children do not receive a sense of worth in their homes. Both of these that I'm going to give you, I saw at Fresh Start on Monday. One way that people respond is this: they consider themselves as worthless and slip into darkness with no confidence in themselves or in others and live without hope. That's what some people do when they get this sense of worthlessness. They get this sense that no matter how hard I try, it doesn't work. They get this sense that they don't belong. No one gives a care if they're here or not. Some just go into a despondency, into a, you know, they live in a tomb. They live in darkness. Others that have been raised that same way know better. They know that down in here there's value somewhere. There's worth here somewhere. And so what they do, they will find those people in life, find those people in this world who confirm that they have worth, who agree with them that there's value there. And from that point on, their lives take the direction of that acceptance. And that's the way they go. I was in the latter group. Others in the former group. Neither response is right. Both responses will cause great difficulty in life. I did the latter one. Some people do the former. How did Jesus have value instilled into him? He was a son. Listen to these words. This is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased. Hear ye him. So the father spoke to his son, and in his most trying hour, the most difficult thing the son ever faced in life, listen to the son speaking to his father. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. When your child comes to you with his deepest need, he senses his value. He feels free to go to daddy, mother, and talk about it. If I do not trust my child, someone someday will. And with that will win the heart of my child. Is your child an embarrassment to you? Does he tarnish your image? If that is how you feel, your child already knows it. Church members know it also. Yesterday I was told to be careful about someone who's thinking of coming here to Grace. Dale, So the phone call was over and I was left with my thoughts and I got to think what, how I'm going to respond to this. And I was walking in this building, in this room, up down these aisles during that conversation. So I put the phone away and started praying, walking around in here. I said, Lord, what should I do? You just heard that. And these words came to me. Jesus said, bring him hither to me. I thought, that's good. I got that. It's okay. You know what Jesus says? My name is Fresh Start. Bring him to me. I'll give him a fresh start. Let's change the sign out there. Fresh Start Christian Fellowship. 5194 Jim Cummings Highway. We can instill value in a child until we see the value of that child, even when they are wrong. To love someone is to see him the way God intended him to be. And Jesus, beholding him, loved him. That is the very beginning of a fresh start. For someone to notice that. And someone did that for me. That's why I'm here today. I want you to go and do likewise. I'd like to ask you, is there someone here today that needs a fresh start? I've told this story several times. This story is not a true story. And I've said that to you. I think I said it here. I'm not sure. But I will give it this morning with another intention, with another purpose. You know, the little boy was on the football squad, on the football team, and he wasn't worth 10 cents on the field. He couldn't do a thing in the gridiron. He couldn't kick. He couldn't pass. He couldn't block. He couldn't intercept the pass. He couldn't do anything. He was a poor student. He was a poor player, but he always put his uniform on, was always there for practice. The coach didn't know what to do with him, but there he was. He participated in the practice things, but he came to the game. He couldn't be put out there. The team would lose. He couldn't. The boy was just not a good player. The season went on to the end. It was time for the championship games to see who was going to be the number one school in the Conference of Roses. And so the boy is sitting beside the coach. Let me play. Let me play, coach. Let me play. 5 minutes. Let me play. The coach looked down at this little kid and felt sorry for him. His daddy had just died that week. And didn't think the boy would ever come to the game, but there he was, dressed with uniform, ready to go, as excited as ever. Poor fellow's dad died. I guess I'll try to find a spot for him somewhere. One of the men out there was not doing so well. He was getting a little wore out, tired. He was exhausted. He pulled him off, sent the little boy out there to take his place. Coach sat back down in his chair, couldn't believe what he saw out there in that field with that boy. What that boy did. He had never seen him do that. He had never seen that kind of participation, that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of dedication. He never saw it. He couldn't believe it. This boy called him back. What happened to you, this boy? What happened to you? You never played like that. Well, coach, maybe you don't understand. My father died. He was blind. This is the first time. He's ever seen me play. Brother Marcus, your boys need to have you watch them play. They need you to take him by the hand to come off the field and need to hear your words of encouragement, your blessing. They need to have daddy watch them play. I'm not talking about football, Marcus. Your son Isaiah needs you to see him play. Josh, Zachary. I preached for 27 years before my father heard me preach the first time. I think that's the only time he ever heard me speak. Once in 56 years of preaching. I have a son who, in his heart of hearts, desires for his daddy to see him play. He would never say it. I heard a very interesting story about him yesterday morning, and I was not in a position to yesterday to drive to say anything to him about it, so I called him last night. Told him what I heard. Told him how much I appreciated it. Told him that God will bless him for that. Told him that it'll be a benefit both to his business and to his family, what he did. Oh, Dad, happens 1,000 times. Just another day at the office. Nothing important about it. Yes, son. Very beautiful thing. A very beautiful story. I'm happy about it. Just wanted you to know it before you go to bed. Our Father in heaven watched his son play. I'm not talking about football games. I'm not talking about running a business. But these are things that we're called to do. And these are things that will make the tremendous difference in the life of our children. And these lessons, if learned early enough, will save many souls from fresh start, from shepherd's fold. And some of them, instead of going to Fresh Start, will be coming to Woodbury. And if this doesn't do anything else, I hope it prepares the congregation for the work that's coming up. We have not yet gotten started. And yet, the Lord's giving us a little bit of practice. And we must learn these lessons. And the best place to learn them is to live them out with that child that's sitting beside you on the bench this morning. May God bless you.